Welcome to Tales of the Resistance, a podcast about antimicrobial resistance. On today's show, we're joined by a rotating lineup of members of the I Am Responsible Project, a nationwide team of educators and researchers working on solutions to AMR. I'm Beth, one of the hosts, and we are joined today by Amber.
Hi, guys.
Mara.
Hey, everybody.
And our fresh new guest, who will hopefully continue to join us, Nafisa.
Hi, everyone.
On today's episode, we are going to be digging deeper into a topic that we have brushed a little bit on in this podcast series before, and that is how to economically incentivize antibiotic development. It's really been a struggle over the last few decades, and we'll explore some of the reasons why. But we got interested in talking more about this because of two fairly recent articles that had come out. One was called Who Will Pay for New Antibiotics? And this was by Katrina Meggett. She's a freelance science and health reporter and wrote this for the Royal Society of Chemistry. And the second article was from Carolyn Hopkins at NBC News. The article is called We Have Arrived in a Post-Antibiotic Era, Who Warns of Too Few New Drugs for Deadly Superbugs? So let's go ahead and get into it. What did we learn about the struggles of developing new antibiotics from these articles?
Preliminary data from the WHO paint a dire picture that just 27 new antibiotics for the most threatening infections are in the clinical trial stage of drug development, which in comparison to that of 1,300 cancer drugs in clinical trials, paints a picture that there are not enough antibiotics being developed. Of the antibiotics on trial, the WHO considers only six of them innovative enough to overcome antibiotic resistance and just two capable of targeting the most resistant bacteria. So the Center for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that more than 2.8 million people, which is about the population of Mississippi for comparison, develop drug-resistant infections each year, and more than 35,000 people die as a result. So the question is, why aren't pharmaceutical companies creating new antibiotics?
While we have talked about the antibiotic pipeline a little bit before, this article, it really goes in depth on the push and pull incentives currently being used to enhance pharma companies to develop new antibiotics, and also on push and pull incentives that could also be put into place in the future. So the current model for the antibiotic pipeline is an economic model for antibiotics based on volume sales.
Basically, what both of these articles are saying is that this is the fundamentally incorrect way to structure a market for antibiotics, because antibiotics, by their nature, we don't want them to be used to that degree. You know, we've talked a lot in our podcast series about this idea of antibiotic stewardship, of why it's important to only use antibiotics when they're absolutely necessary. But the problem with that is, and again, we've talked about this to some extent before, that part of the thing that we have to use to address growing antimicrobial resistance is increased R&D to develop new drugs. We have to do that because evolution of the microbes is going to happen. So we have to meet that with continuing innovation within our drugs. But if the point of developing a new drug is not to use it en masse, it's to use it in a very targeted manner for only a few people who have a strain of the illness that couldn't be treated with anything else, then often you get to the situation where you may only have like 1,000, 10,000 people who will take that drug in the first 10 years of its being available. And if your economic structure is all based on volume of sales, but also on patents, then you will very quickly find that all the companies that would have gone into research and development of antibiotics are going out of business during that 10-year period. And that is indeed what has happened within pharma. So really fascinating situation, and the articles are kind of around discussing, okay, so what do we do about it?
Yes, what do we do about that discrepancy between how much it costs to develop an antibiotic and how much the company is going to get back in sales, which is causing the breakdown of the pipeline because it causes, big pharma and just pharma in general not to want to develop new antibiotics. So we're having a desert in our antibiotic development.
Well, it says that more than 20 pharma companies in a bid to avoid the scenario, and almost 20 pharma companies are into the process of, I mean, they're committed that they are trying to develop some new type of antibiotics. In that way, their investment will be equal. And if one company want to develop a single drug, they will have to invest almost $1.5 billion, and they can only make business up to like 40 million, which is very low. So I think if 20 pharma companies come together, then they can invest in 20 different portion, and their investment will not be that much for one single company, and then they can produce as many as drug they want from the developed drug.
Kind of describing here is economies of scale. The idea that you have a big resource overhead available so that the individual research for a single drug is small relative to the overall investment, and that the possibilities of finding a profitable option because you have so many irons in the fire are that you have a higher probability of finding something. Big companies, because they're developing so many drugs, even if there is a very low probability that any one thing that they're doing will be successful because they're doing so many of them, they're overall, they are profitable. However, you have to have the opportunity to make money on it in the economic structure. That does not exist. So, even if a big company has the wherewithal to have a lot of unsuccessful research, the ones that they do find that are successful, those are not going to be profitable. Because the way antibiotics are sold, marketed, restricted, new antibiotics do not really make money for pharmaceutical companies. And so all the big companies have left the space. We could go away from the idea that they have an exclusion period is removed and we find some other way to pay for it. And there has been some experimentation on that in terms of creating prize money, but it's still not going to be enough unless you think of a whole different market structure to pay for these, because antibiotics by their nature should be sold in such low volumes
Yeah.
that they will never be profitable.
PASTEUR Act has some merit, has some potential, and that would allow pharmaceutical companies to contractually make critical new drugs available. And I think, as a taxpayer, I would be more than happy to see my tax money go towards a program like that and feel like that's part of my duty as a citizen. So I don't know what other people think about that. I'm interested to hear.
I actually went down a little bit of a rabbit hole on the PASTEUR Act, Amber. This has been introduced a few times before, so this is not new, but recently reintroduced in 2023, and it would create a pull incentive. So maybe we should give for the audience who hasn't actually read these articles what they both sort of come to as a recommendation for how to deal with the problem of failure in the market. And that is what we fundamentally have. We do recognize that the market is broken. And when the market is broken, there is a requirement to have intervention. And that intervention is usually governmental. So these laws basically seek to do that by creating a subscription model for antibiotics. So rather than having a market that is volume-based, you get a price per unit of antibiotics you sell, you will get instead a subscription for providing the antibiotics and having them available to providers when they need them. with no guaranteed number of units to sell. It's just that you've developed the prescription or you've developed the formulation and you've put in enough investment into production so that you can ensure that it is available at the time that it is required. So the PASTEUR Act, it was, like I said, reintroduced here earlier in the spring 2023. And I went down a real rabbit hole exploring kind of where we are with this. So where it is right now, it's introduced both in the House and in the Senate, and it will have to go through the budgetary process to be included as a law or into existing budget. So it might not pass as a law itself, but it could be included in, say, HHS funding or something like that. But right now it's in committee, in the Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. And I say that because in July, this committee had a hearing on AMR and modern medicine. And I watched it. It was pretty interesting. That's what I'm going to send the link to the show notes so people can explore it. It's about 2 hours of, questions with a doctor, a veterinarian, a patient, and a representative of a small biotech firm who makes antibiotics. And they're just kind of talking about this whole problem. How do you fund and develop new antibiotics? And I cannot tell you how many times, even though this committee meeting was not ostensibly about the PASTEUR Act, it was just about like sort of superbugs, antimicrobial resistance. Every single one of the people on that panel recommended the passage of the PASTEUR Act. They put it in their opening argument and their closing argument. And that was the one overarching takeaway, I would say, from watching that committee hearing. And they all had really interesting testimony. So I would definitely recommend watching it. And I'll drop that in, like I said, to the show notes for anyone who's interested.
Something that I was interested in is comparing the two articles when it comes to the cost of how much it's going to cost to actually develop antibiotics, because it seemed to me that they have two different costs on here, and I'm kind of curious to see what you guys think, because on Amber's article, it said that developing one new antibiotic can take up to 2 decades and usually costs about $500 million to $700 million, according to pharma. And when it came to the other article that I recommended about who will pay for antibiotics, it said that what was the cost?
It's about 1.5 billion.
Yeah, I think you're right. 1.5 billion to develop new antibiotics. And so that is a big difference, a huge difference, really. And I don't know if you guys have heard any other different numbers, but I would be really curious to know which one of those is more accurate, since it has, obviously a huge impact on how much countries should be considering spending. That is a huge discrepancy in a
Yes, this is almost a double. So I think it depends on what type of antibiotic that you are targeting. That's one thing, and the cost can vary.
So first of all, I note that the two papers are about two different systems, two different health systems. One is for an audience in the UK and one for the United States. And I'm not very familiar with how the two systems are different for drug development, but that could be part of it. We've had some discussions with some representatives from CARB-X, and CARB-X is a sort of public-private partnership here in the United States that's kind of working on creating better push incentive, so investment in R&D, that sort of traditional place for these small companies to make sure that they're supported, because we know that there's a lot of options out there for new antimicrobials, but the challenge in the development cost is often those clinical trials that Nafisa was talking about. So CARB-X has done a lot of work in sort of helping to move through that process, that clinical trial stage for these small companies. However, when we talked to them, they were talking about how that doesn't necessarily ensure that all of those drugs continue to be available even when they are developed and make it through clinical trials, because there's this secondary hurdle level of manufacturing. Then you have to actually run the business and you have to be meeting the demands of the overhead of creating the drugs without being able to get much in terms of the sales, right? Because you have to scale up in order to create to hire all the people, to buy the laboratory space or the manufacturing space, to buy the inputs and all of that stuff that will set you up in order to manufacture this drug. And without being able to sell any of them, that's another place that you see a lot of companies fail. So it could be, coming back to the discrepancy of the prices, that I noticed in the one article they were talking about the cost of developing a drug in the sense of what price they were trying to negotiate within a pull incentive for how much it is of value for a country to have a drug available. So that article discusses that next step. So once you have a law like the Pasteur Law in place, then you get to decide how much a government is going to pay a company in order for this research and development into new drugs. And so they are trying to negotiate what is that price going to be. And one of the price differences is going to be something like this, is like, how much of that do you cover? Are you covering just the initial research and development? Are you going to cover the whole manufacturing and startup? Are you going to cover, in addition to that, another layer would be research and development for the next drug. Are you going to continue to reinvest in that company? So, like, the cost could be very wildly different depending on what you're counting as part of the development for a particular drug. You know what I'm saying?
In my opinion, USA have much more potential than UK in terms of fighting AMR. And the one thing that is holding back USA right now, I think it's the collaboration process. I mean, if you look at the stats, it says that almost the population of Mississippi gets infected with superbugs every year. So this is a huge thing for USA. I think they should come together. The research collaboration is the main factor that I think USA right now needs.
I think that not only is there no economic incentive for companies to simply collaborate on their own terms, there are like reasons why they won't, because they have legal obligations to their shareholders. So they're not going to give anything away. So the only times that they will do something like this massive industry-wide effort to develop new drugs like they did for COVID, is when there is this major push from outside of their industry, from things like government and huge public demand to do so. And, we have a part of kind of trying to drive that, but it's not going to come from just the researchers themselves. I don't foresee that ever happening.
What we can do is make people more aware of the situation, what's going on, what will be the consequences. I mean, at least we can say that there will be no cure for you when you get infected with this type of superbug. So beware.
Well, like Mara said about COVID and public awareness, like the public demanded a vaccine. And there isn't that kind of awareness of AMR where we're saying this needs to happen. There isn't the urgency and it's not viewed as a crisis yet, and it needs to be.
Yeah, I was thinking to ask maybe this is what then would happen if the antibiotic pipeline's fix is just too slow? If we don't get it done in time, what are some possible solutions besides just fixing the antibiotic pipeline? And Nafisa touched on this a little bit, increasing AMR awareness so you can have more infection prevention, and such. But does anybody have any comments on that?
Well, I think we're in a do or die situation. I don't think there's an option not to fix it. The what was it? The WHO put out a report. I think this is a couple of years ago already, because the data was for 2019. But 5 million people worldwide dying of an antibiotic-resistant infection already per year. This is more than COVID. So even though we are not paying as much attention to it, it's definitely going to be impacting someone you know soon. I mean, it already did impacts a lot of people, but you know what I mean? We've talked so much on this podcast series about how do we increase awareness, and we've come back to this idea so many times of when it hits you personally, then you care. And it's so unfortunate to say so, but I don't foresee a situation where we don't fix this problem of the supply chain, because it's not a problem of innovation. There are hundreds of potential antimicrobials that could be researched. There are dozens of those in the pipeline that just don't have the funding to go into the next stage of maybe clinical trials. There are, or maybe hundreds in the pipeline, and there are dozens that could be going into manufacturing and just don't have a company to sort of back them. This is not a problem of the science and innovation. This is a problem of the marketplace failure. And that is something that we can fix as a society, as we saw with the COVID vaccine development, if we have enough political will and public demand. And that is, I think, a function of awareness. And while we'd like to say we can get awareness done with good communication, and we will certainly try to do that, it may be that it takes like that personal experience with antibiotic resistance to get that awareness out there. But either way, it's going to happen, and we're going to fix this problem in terms of fixing the marketplace. After that, how long it takes to be getting back on top of staying ahead. I mean, because basically, you're going to develop a bunch of antibiotics, then they're going to be resistance developed to that, then you're developing more. So you got to get enough development to start getting out ahead of these things. And that could take a while. There'll be some lag there. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important that we act on this now. But I don't think that we're not going to be able to meet the challenge. It's just a matter of how many lives have to be lost, how much suffering has to be endured before we can get our act together and do it.
Antimicrobial resistance is a slow killer, and the statistical data says that it is happening. More people are getting killed by the superbugs than COVID or diabetes or this type of worldwide phenomenon. So this is basically a pandemic right now. So you just cannot create herd immunity to a bacterial disease like a viral disease. I mean, that process of developing herd immunity to a bacterial disease is very, it takes a very long time than a viral one. So if this hits like COVID or something else, then we will not be able to get out of this situation like we did from COVID. It took us 2 to 3 years to get out of the situation. But when Salmonella or Staphylococcus or Shigella or this type of common bacteria, when they're becoming superbugs, and if at any point of the time they hit us like COVID, we will not be able to like tackle it like we did with COVID. And COVID destroyed the world's economy. And you just cannot imagine how much damage this type of bacterial disease will cause. So we should be prepared, and for that, inventing more drugs, not just evaluating how much profit we're going to make out of it, and just investing for our existence should be the primary focus for us right now.
Well, that's all the time that we have today. I want to thank my co-hosts and the audience members for joining us as always, and we'll look forward to talking again very soon. Bye-bye.